Hey everyone, I'm Oliver.
And I'm Jello.
And this is the Differing Cinematic Tastes of Jello and Oliver. And it is our first official episode, and in this episode, we are going to talk about two movies. One that I chose for Jello, which is Air Force One.
And one that I chose for Oliver, which is Alien.
So we're going to start with Alien. For those who don't know, Alien came out in 1979. I'm like saying these as if, you know, everyone in the world knows.
But, yeah, just off the top of your head.
It came out in 1979. It's directed by Ridley Scott, and it is like a sci-fi horror thriller type thing. Mm-hmm. So we will start from the beginning. Why did you choose this movie for me?
Well, this is the one that sort of kicked the whole idea for us going through your movie library and watching things off, because I was like, hey, Oliver, have you seen Alien? And you were like, no. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Everyone's like, seen Alien.
And I'm like, I bought Alien without watching.
Yeah, you own Alien, and you haven't seen Alien? So I was like, we are watching Alien. So, I mean, if you were to say, like, choose any movie to show to Oliver, I don't know that I would have immediately chosen Alien, but this is the world we live in. So
and then presented with the options, you're like, Alien.
Yeah.
Also, so, it was on the list. Like, it was one of those things where I was like, I can't say I'm like a movie guy without having ever watched Alien.
I mean, basically, that's why it was so ridiculous to me that you've never seen it.
So our thoughts, well, I guess.
Yeah. Well, your thoughts. So I've seen it, you know, a couple times now.
Right.
So I know what I think about it, but the question is, what do you think about it?
So my thoughts on it, I liked it. I thought it was good. I think part of the issue for me is that this movie came out 40 years ago and I'm just watching it now. And so, you know, like, I'm watching it, and first off, if by now you don't know what happens in Alien, then you've probably, like...
That's ridiculous. Right. You should go watch Alien. So,
spoiler alert, then this is just gonna go for Alien and Air Force One, and basically our entire show is probably...
Yeah, for the rest of the show. Spoiler alert for it all.
So Sigourney Weaver as Ripley is the only one who survives the movie.
Well, the cat.
And the cat. Jones, I think. Jonesy. The cat. Jonesy. Is the only one who survives the movie, which everyone pretty much knows by now. And so I think that also didn't really help, because, I mean, I've read the plot before, and I'm like, I basically know, like, everyone dies. The general order in which the people die. So it wasn't really, like, scary or tense to me. It wasn't tense probably for that reason, but it also just, it wasn't really scary. And again, maybe that's, you know, because it's 40 years old, and maybe it was really scary in 1979.
Define scary. Like, what is a movie you would consider scary, I guess?
Basically, like, I'm not a horror guy. Like, I would never watch, like, any of the Nightmare on Elm Street or, like, Friday the 13th or, like, you know, anything horror-based. I don't.
So you wouldn't consider those scary?
Yeah. Not even scary.
How do you know you haven't seen them?
I'm just assuming.
Okay. So against your platonic ideal of a scary movie.
Yeah. Or like any ghost things. Like, I don't like stuff like that. So that's what I would consider a horror movie. And so I don't know. It wasn't scary to me. And I love the design of the alien. It's like a great design. Although I guess if you do some reading on it, like, it's kind of weird when you read up on it. But the guy who designed it was kind of weird. But it's scary until you see a man in a suit, like at the end of the movie. Because that's, I think, the first time they really... When's the first time they really show the full alien? Is it before it kills the two at the end?
It's when it kills the guy in the room with the rain coming down.
Yeah, but they don't fully show... what's his name? Brett or Brent? I know it's...
I don't remember.
The actor is Harry Dean Stanton. Which we'll get into that in a little. But no, I think I just have issues with, like, it's not scary. It's not tense. seeing the monster as just a guy in a suit doesn't really do anything for me. But I think it's because I'm too late on it. Like, if I had seen this and didn't know about it, I think it would have been a lot better. So another issue that I do have, I mentioned the guy who just goes off to find the cat, like, he's dead, like, immediately. There's no way he's surviving the movie. We talked about this, like, after we watched the movie, and I'm like, was that a common thing in horror movies? Or, so, like, was
the
that
trope of the person going off alone and getting knocked off?
We
decided we really didn't know, right? Like,
right, we don't know, because I don't think that's really a genre that either of us are, like, super into. So I didn't really want to judge it, you know, if it wasn't that big of a thing when they started, or, well, not when they started making movies, but if it wasn't that big of an issue in the 70s, or that common for, like, people to just wander off and get killed, then I don't want to penalize it for that. Like, it's, you know, it's not its fault. And they actually subvert it later when Ripley goes off on her own and you're like, oh boy, okay. She's going to be the one to die, and she ends up living. So I don't know if any of my ramblings. I know, it's like, there's a CinemaSins, the Everything Wrong with Alien. It's like, I don't care how much you love cats. Like, you're not that concerned. But that's my thoughts. It was good. It was, I don't know, I wasn't overly thrilled with it, but I think part of that is me. So what were your thoughts on it before? What did I like?
Well, hold on. You've said a whole bunch of bad things. Was there anything good that you liked?
Ian Holm was good, a.k.a. Bilbo, who played the android Ash. He was good. Mm-hmm. I read somewhere, TV Tropes, one of my favorite sites, where they're like, well, actually, like, you know, Sigourney Weaver was, like, the least famous person in this movie. It's like, yeah, but she was still, like, second or third billing, so it's not like it was that unexpected that she was the last one to survive. But I don't know. It's like, I can't really think of things that I really liked about it. I can just, like, admit that it was good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't great. And I think, I mean, I did like the design of, like, the ships and, like, the models that they used, and obviously the alien design. But yeah.
What did you think of the twist where it turns out that Ash is an android?
So I did already know that just from reading.
Oh,
but
okay.
I can, like, that was good because, you know, it's a future society or whatever you want to call it. Like, they're in the future. So it makes sense that there could be an android, but they never really discuss the fact that there could be androids. So I like it. Like, it was a good twist, and it explains why he was being shady. Mm-hmm. But no, that I did like. That was good. And I did like Tom Skerritt as the captain. But, you know, he was kind of stupid. No, actually, and you know what? So I owe a lot to TV Tropes and CinemaSins and, you know, sites that talk about movies. But I just have to say, Kane, the one who, like, touches the egg and gets it on it, like the face hugger on his face, is an idiot. There's just there's some really bad moves in this movie. So yeah, I can't really, like, point to a lot that I liked, but I also, like, I didn't dislike it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I have a score that I gave it on a site that I use to review movies, but I will withhold that until you tell me, like, what your thoughts are on it.
Yeah, so I'd say that Alien is not my favorite movie in the entire world, obviously, because it would not have been my first choice to show you. But I do appreciate it. I think it does what I like about it is I think it does a really excellent job of just creating this foreboding universe. Like, every single locale they find themselves in just feels so alien and evil and wrong.
No pun intended.
You know? Yeah, pun kind of intended in, like, the really literal sense. Like, yes, it's alien. And so I really like that sort of design, and I kind of, in tandem with that, I like sort of the pacing that Ridley Scott uses. Like, you get a lot of these long shots and just these very moody things where you're hearing the sounds of the ship and you're, you know, seeing weird lighting situations playing off the pipes on the walls. Like, it's a very atmospheric movie, and that I like a lot about it. And I think that dread sort of plays well into sort of like the theme of just like they're out in space and, you know, there's something that's totally beyond their capabilities. So I like that about it a lot. As far as like the actual sequence of events and stuff, it's just like, whatever. It's a horror movie. Like,
right, the plot's
it doesn't really
not
matter.
Really that complicated.
There are a couple quirks though that I think are really cool. Like, one of them is the chestburster scene. Like, that's kind of iconic for a good reason, because it sort of makes a space in the story where you kind of you let down your guard a little. And then it's like, bleh, like the most violent and awful scene in the entire movie. So that's a kind of cool quirk for it to have. And the other thing is, I also do like the twist where Ash turns out to be an android. I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, that is so engrossing, because that there can be more to this world than what they've explicitly stated. And it just, it makes sense for that to be part of the world and come out. And I guess along that lines, like, there's some big world building concepts that they sort of allude to, but never really do much. Like, Mother being this supercomputer that has all the answers. Like, pretty much the only purpose of that in the plot is to create this foreboding moment where it doesn't have the answers. And it's just like, sorry, you're on your own. But just all those things compound together, I think, to create a really fascinating universe for me. And that's really the thing that I like the most about it.
The world building or the foreboding?
Both. I think they go together. The world building is good because it creates this foreboding feeling.
There is one thing, like, I've never seen this, but they do try to build on the world in Prometheus, which was like a prequel.
And I've never seen that.
No, me neither. And I have no desire to, so that you're not going to be hearing that on this show ever, probably. But I heard they did a
very
bad
job. Sort of like a misguided attempt to do it, because I think, like, I know that when people hear the word world building, they kind of always think about, like, let's get the exposition dumps in here. And that's kind of, at least personally, that's not my favorite type of world building. I'm more about the sort of atmosphere, and I'm okay with there being a whole bunch of question marks in the sky.
I agree.
It's just that feeling of the story in the moment, like that experience, the environment and the atmosphere of that.
To bring another movie in here and probably alienate a half of people who would ever listen to this to begin with, it reminds me of Star Wars The Last Jedi, which, have you seen?
Yes.
Okay, good. We hadn't established that. But it's kind of like how, you know, in that, spoiler alert, you know, who are Rey's parents? They're nobody. Who's Supreme Leader Snoke? It doesn't matter. They just killed him. It's like, I like things that don't have to be explained all the time. Like, you know that there's something there, but it doesn't have to be explained to you. And I think that's kind of what you're saying. Like, you know that there's a world built, but you don't know what it is.
Okay, so all that said, what would you rate it out of 5 narwhals?
Okay.
I've shared this movie that I like, kind of like, with you. What would you rate it out of 5 narwhals?
Okay. I rated it 3.5 out of 5 narwhals.
Really?
Now, my reasoning...
Okay, give your reasoning.
I would give it 3 as like an average movie. But I feel like it deserves respect that maybe I'm just too late to it and I missed, you know, the timing, and I don't know, maybe we're just so desensitized to things that are supposed to be scary. But I think it deserved that extra half star just because I think part of it is me.
For the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's fair, like, because it's like, how am I rating this movie? But I do feel like it deserved that.
Okay. Well, I think that's very interesting because I predicted that you would score it 3.5 narwhals exactly.
Oh.
Yes!
How am I supposed to beat you this episode?
I don't know. I don't think you can. So that gives me... tie,
so I have to be good.
Yeah, that gives me a narwhal difference of 0.
Wow. Okay, so this is going to be difficult for me. And we didn't super plan this out, but maybe this is why we should have gone with 3 movies.
So that there's always a tiebreaker.
See, yeah, but we are going to see how this goes and if I can make up this difference with our next movie, Air Force One. So I chose this for Jell-O because I was having trouble figuring out a movie to watch. One, because like I just wasn't thinking too much about it, but also just like trying to find something that, I don't know, would work. But I picked this because I think it's like the greatest or one of the greatest action movies of the 90s. Harrison Ford plays the president. Gary Oldman plays a Russian terrorist and Glenn Close plays the vice president. So like I basically gave you that plot summary and I'm like, that's basically all you need to know.
Yeah. And to be honest, when you were like, it's Air Force One, I was like, I don't understand how that could be an entire action movie. Like, it's a play. Like, how do you do it all on the plane? But anyway.
So it came out in 1997. Yeah, I'm just going to give some brief little details. It came out in 1997, was directed by Wolfgang Petersen. And so what were your thoughts on Air Force One? Because I've seen this movie many times.
Yeah. So do you have a rating, a predicted rating for me already in mind?
A little, but I need to I need to gauge what you say, because like I gotta strategize. Okay. Now that you've got the lead on me.
Oh man. Okay. That seems like cheating, but whatever.
It's strategy, Jell-O.
Oh sure. Yeah. So I'm just going to go out and say that I liked this movie. I liked Air Force One. I thought it was fun and it was funny, which is probably a little surprising to you because...
Yeah, I'm like, intrigued. Well, I'm intrigued why you think it was funny.
Okay, yeah, I'll get into that. I guess okay. I want to preamble it by saying so usually the sorts of movies I like, and I'm like, oh, let's watch The Mirror by Tarkovsky and things like that. So it's like there's sort of a profound sentiment that I wouldn't ever like an action movie. but there's a certain type of action. There's a certain type of simple narrative, which is so earnest and straightforward that it like becomes really profound in its own way. I'm thinking of something like The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's literally just a story about good and evil, but mm-hmm. it's done so truly that it's like, ah, that's so satisfying. Like, you don't need complexity or nuance or weird
ambiguity.
Yeah, you don't need weird ambiguity to make it a satisfying experience. So I kind of felt like Air Force One was along those lines. Like, it's just a really straightforward, here's the bad guys, they've taken over the plane, they're killing people, and just the good guys need to be courageous and upstanding and defeat the bad guys. And it just does that so enthusiastically and sort of like pure-heartedly. It's like, yeah, that's fun. That's enjoyable. That's really satisfying to watch.
Which is funny because like it could come across as like really like propaganda, like, you know, like the Americans have to fight the Russians, but it doesn't really come across that way.
Yeah, not aggressively. There is a moment early on where it's like, this is obviously the political environment of the 90s, because they're talking about, like, It's the very first scene, actually, when it's like they have the sting on the headquarters to get the general, and they yank him out on a helicopter, and then people are like, "Yay! This is a great thing. We just successfully did this sting." And I'm pretty sure, like nowadays, if that was in a movie, that would be portrayed as like, "This is the worst thing ever. This is governmental corruption."
Yeah.
There is a little bit of flavor of maybe like putting a weirdly positive spin on things, but that's not the reason why I don't think it goes all the way. So here's what I say. I don't think it goes all the way. I don't think it is as solid and good a movie as something like The Lord of the Rings.
I'm just thinking of the comparison.
Yeah.
Between Air Force One and Lord of the Rings.
Never publish this podcast. My life will be shame.
Clickbait. Here's why Air Force One is better than the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. So why I don't think it goes all the way is just occasionally it just goes completely Michael Bay bonkers. And it's sort of a tonal dissonance. So like on one hand, you'll have a scene that is like Glenn Close in the Situation Room or in the press room, like giving a statement. And like Glenn Close does a really good job. She's like probably the best actor in the movie.
She is really good in it. I disagree with that statement, but she is.
That's because you just love Gary Oldman.
I adore Gary Oldman, and I think he's excellent in this movie.
But I think Glenn Close is the best. And I like all of those scenes have sort of like, you know, like a Spielbergian feel good drama sort of weight to them. Like you could imagine them being in Lincoln or something that they pull off so believably and dramatically, and you know, stuff
speaking
like that
of, I don't know if we can do Lincoln on this podcast because we've both seen that, but
yeah, probably not, but that'd be too bad.
Great movie.
But you have scenes like that, like immediately juxtaposed with scenes of Harrison Ford dangling out the parachute ramp by a strap while in the background like an entire fuel tanker explodes for no reason except for they wanted an explosion. It's like,
well, no, it exploded because it's like, I don't know, landing parts were like on
the plane. Yeah, but does that truly make any sense? Like,
I don't know.
Like on one hand you have this very like sort of serious and almost reverent sort of tone, like, you know, this is drama, this is
especially, you know, with the hostages.
Yeah, like with the hostages, like, oh my gosh, the human, you know, humanity, human suffering, that sort of thing. And then there's a sort of like callousness and recklessness where it's like, okay, but now we're just going to blow a whole ton of people out of the back of the plane and have them plummet to their deaths. And it's like, wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like that was not the sort of movie this was a moment ago. So yeah, I just feel like it was sort of uneven in that subtle way. And so that was probably my main complaint about it. Another thing that I really liked was I love movies that sort of take place in a really confined location. So like whenever they make a play into a movie or something like that, I just love that because you end up knowing every single square inch of that space. And same thing here. It's like you basically have seen and like basically every single door on that plane is plot critical in some way.
So I'm glad you brought that up because, and I'm going to reference a lot of movie podcasts or movie sites on this show, but on the Rewatchables, Chris Ryan talks about that with Die Hard, where, you know, you get to know the building so well that when things are going on, you know exactly where they are relative to the rest of the movie.
Yeah. And just probably going back to the whole world building thing we were talking about with Alien, it just seems to create a believable space for me. Like it's a space that you feel like you're there, like you know every single bit of it. And I think there's something to be said for that, as opposed to, you know, like in a lot of blockbusters nowadays, you get lots of beautiful, wild CG rendered landscapes.
Yeah.
That you just sort of like see for an instant and you never really feel like you're there. It's just sort of a spectacle. Whereas like this is literally like the inside of a bureaucratic plane. Like it is the most boring place on the entire planet. Well, it's not on the planet, it's in the sky.
That would actually be very interesting.
But it's still like one of the most memorable settings, I would say, like from any movie I've seen, just because you get to know every single bit of it. So those were my main thoughts.
Well, you bring up a good point. Okay, so I mean, I've made it clear that this is one of the best action movies of the 90s, but I like a point you made, like, about the plane, and like I had mentioned with Die Hard, it's like they walk by the fridge with the milk gallon that got shot through, like after its part in the plot is done, which is very interesting, because it's like, you know, most movies you'd be like, oh, here's a plot point, and then we never see it again. But they go by, I don't remember, I mean, obviously that exact thing of milk isn't going to be there, but like where it was shot up is there, and you're like, oh, I remember that. But no, yeah, I said before, Gary Oldman, to segue awkwardly from milk to Gary Oldman. I think he's excellent in this movie. I mean, he's like excellent in every movie, but there's one scene in particular that highlights it to me. There's a scene where he is holding the president's wife and daughter hostage on the plane. And I think he's like tying up the one's wrist so she can't like move. And he's like asking the girl, she's like a 12-year-old girl, if she thinks he's a monster, and like, you know, when he shot this man, like it strengthened his belief in his cause or whatever. And he is giving it his all, like all in on this. And this girl is like woodenly reading her lines. And like, I know it's a child actor, but come on, like it just really, he's like, he's so much better.
You're very harsh on children, Oliver.
But no, like, and not to, you know, just dunk all over this girl for not being as good of an actor as Gary Oldman, but it is really obvious in that scene how good he is. But no, it's Harrison Ford is standard Harrison Ford. Like, he's not a great actor, but he's an action presence. And I don't know, it's just one of, I can think of like five action movies from the 90s that are like really, really good. And this is among them. I mean, and there are, I'm sure, plenty more, but this is one that I like to watch a lot. And it's one of those where then this sounds like it works against it, but like if I'm doing something else, I'll put this on in the background because I've seen it enough that it's just like there.
It's familiar.
It's actually kind of weird to watch it through all the way because I've like watched it so many times it almost gets like boring. And right, that, again, that sounds negative, but like I think that kind of just shows like the movie's strength. Yeah. Except when the plane crashes at the end, that's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life, CGI wise.
That is pretty bad. There is actually one other question mark moment we need to talk about, which is when they release the general from prison. Like, what is up again with that? That's another one of those instances where like the politicians are like cheering and acting like something good has happened, and I'm just like, what are you talking about? Like, that's like international crime or something. You just killed a prisoner.
Who haven't seen the movie, the main like crux of the plot is there was like an old Soviet general who got arrested and put in prison.
Oh, he wasn't Soviet. They used
Kazakhstan.
Yeah, Kazakhstan.
Well, like that would be ex-Soviet, I think.
Yeah.
I think that was part of the USSR. I wasn't alive during the Cold War, but anyway. I just heard like a beep. Okay, so he is captured at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, he's a bad dude. They're like, yes, he is humanitarianly bad. That was the word.
So the whole thing with the Russian terrorists is they want him released so that he can go back to leading Russia. So it must,
Kazakhstan.
Yeah. Well, I think they want him to lead. It must be Soviet then, because like these two countries working together. But so basically, OK, we just rambled for like 5 minutes. The long and short of it is the general gets arrested. The Russians want him released. That's why they take Air Force One hostage. And
eventually they succeed. Like, yes, they pressure Harrison Ford into getting the Russian president to release the general.
Yes, because they are otherwise going to kill his family.
Right.
The president's. And eventually there's a fight and Harrison Ford kills Gary Oldman with the greatest presidential one-liner of all time. Get off my plane. Nothing will ever come close. And then he immediately goes and cancels the release. So this general, while we don't root for him, he is like walking out of the prison free.
Yeah, so like during the fight, they've been intercutting like the general slowly walking out of the prison, and like there's a helicopter that's landed with the general's supporters and they're waiting for him at the gate, and the gates are open and like all the prisoners are cheering and the guards are like, oh, this is terrible, and the Russian president is all sad. So yeah, but Harrison Ford kills Gary Oldman and cancels the order just as the general is walking across the front yard of the prison.
Great timing, by the way.
Yeah, great timing. And so I think as viewers, the first time we expect that like, oh, the guards are going to like rush out and grab him or something. But that's not what happens.
They immediately, they sound the alarm and he starts running and they immediately shoot him dead.
Yeah, they just gun him down, and his aides, like the people who came to pick him up, they gun them down too.
I'm like, I don't support this general, but like, I mean, but maybe that at least seemed pretty a dirty moment to be like, hey, no, you're actually arrested again.
Yeah, you just literally like killed a prisoner that you had. What's the word? Pardoned.
Yeah, I mean, if he was released, I mean, I don't know what their laws would be like, but it does crack me up in like the absurdity of it. It's almost like dark humor where you're like, you're free. Oh, never mind. You're dead.
Yeah, everyone is dead. And then it immediately cuts to a scene of all the Russians being like, yay!
Yeah, and the situation room, they're all cheering.
Yeah, and the viewers are just sitting there being like, what the heck just happened? That wasn't good.
Yeah. I think I have your rating, but are you ready to rate this movie?
I am ready to rate this movie. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 narwhals.
Dang it. And this is such an honor system thing, but I thought you were going to give it 3.5 out of 5.
Ooh.
So that is an absolute value of 0.5. Also, we never discussed this, but are we like, are half stars the limit?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so we're not going to be like, I'm giving this 3.62 stars.
No.
I guess narwhal, sorry. Okay, so it seems you have won the first episode.
Yep.
But before we go, I also have to mention, because you have to, this movie should end way faster than it does. There's then like a whole 20-minute sequence where the plane is like crashing, or like it's like about to crash, and there are like Russian jets like trying to take it down, and you're but Gary Oldman's dead, so this movie should be over anyway. That's, you know, but
okay,
so the score, how would we want to word that, your discrepancy,
my narwhal difference,
your narwhal yes, your narwhal difference for me and Alien was 0, and my narwhal difference for you and Air Force One was 0.5, making you the winner of episode 1, The Phantom.
Yeah, off to a good start.
I'm going to have to like fix this. So like every episode there's, you know, but oh yeah, no, I thought you were going to give it 4 also.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to thank you guys for tuning into the first episode of The Differing Cinematic Tastes of Jello and Oliver. Alien, Air Force One. Those were the two movies we talked about, as if you didn't just listen to the episode.
And I came out the victor
by guessing my rating for Alien better than I guessed his rating for Air Force One. But Again, thank you. It's been quite a while since we recorded anything together, so we're relearning the ropes. We'll get better as it goes, but I think this was a solid first episode. And actually, you know, I think we can tease the next episode because I think we've both chosen our next movies, right?
We have, but honestly, I forgot what I chose.
Okay, well, you actually chose Aliens.
Oh, did I?
You did. And my choice for him is Jojo Rabbit.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking forward to that one.
Yeah, so we will be back next time with Aliens and Jojo Rabbit. But I am Oliver.
And I'm Jello.
And this has... Sorry. Just the... You like dejectedly almost.
I'm Jello.
I'm Jello. And this has been the differing cinematic tastes of Jello and Oliver. Dun dun dun.
We did it!
We did it! So I have a score that I gave it on a site that I use to review movies, but I will withhold that until you tell me like what your thoughts are on it.
Okay. Yeah. Hold on. Let me clear my lungs here. You can cut that out later.
You made me edit something. So I think it's
hold
time.
Hold on. Let's take a pause because I think there's a farm tractor about to drive past.
Okay.
What?
You mean we're not recording in an actual studio?
What?
What?
Okay, I'm not seeing anything, so...
Okay.
Let's just go with it. You know, like in a Marvel movie, you can have this amazing vista with these tremendous clouds.
Wait, my laptop's about to die.
Okay.
We might have to start that part over because I heard the little, like, boing.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Are you going to plug it in?
Yeah, I have to go get it, though.